What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Movies and Booze, I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It's time for Movies and Booze. Brian Lloyd, Fionnuala Jones and Leslie Williams join us once again. Good afternoon to you all. And already I see Moira on our Twitter has sent in a picture of some bottles. It's Coates Triple Vintage. And Moira wants to know... could you ask if it's worth holding on to these two? What could I get it if I sold it? So Leslie, what do you think? Brace yourself, Moira. I hope you haven't made any big holiday plans. This is like the cash machine. Hang on now, Moira. Hang on. Sit down, Moira. Wait a minute.
So a bottle of this exact thing.
Yes.
No, single bottle.
Yeah.
She's got a pair.
She's got two of them.
Yeah. Hammer. Recent auction,
yeah.
Look it up on Leasy Live,
yeah.
£12.
£12! Wow! Moira, that's good.
It could be interesting. It genuinely could be interesting, though. Bristol made, I think England has a great tradition of cider.
Yes.
I found a bottle of, admittedly, cask-aged cider, whiskey barrel-aged cider in the cupboard that I'd completely forgotten about that was given to me about 3 or 4 years ago. And it was stunning. Now, it was from... down in West Cork, so it was Stonewell. There was a bottle of Stonewell whiskey, but it was stunning, and I think probably better for the bit of aging that it got, unintentionally.
Yeah, okay, so the older this is, theoretically, the better it might be.
The cork is still intact, and
yeah.
I mean, it may have lost its fizz, but look, it could genuinely be interesting to taste, but I wouldn't be trying to sell it. You might get a few quid for it, 20 quid, but I don't think.
Yeah, but the bottles are nice. It'd be nice kind of for holding candles and things.
Yeah, but I think she should chill it, and if it's really, so what'll have happened, I suspect, is the fizz will have gone, But it should still be kind of...
That's life, really.
Just come on, Sean, it's yeah, right.
Sing her later.
Relax,
yeah.
William. Come on. Yeah. Jesus.
So we are talking about Italian wines today, Leslie.
So we've gone to Italy's two best wine regions, right? But we haven't got their best stuff because their best stuff is 100, up or hundreds. So what I've done is the second best wine from
good
Piedmont,
enough for me,
and the second best wine from Tuscany.
All right, that's good enough. But today, a very special occasion, Brian. Two of the worst films to be released this year, possibly.
this
millennium.
I mean, definitely, it ends with us was muck on a level that I can't define at this era of the day.
Yeah,
and Borderlands, I was actively forgetting it as I was watching it, so it's going to be fun for me to try review that.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, and before we get to that, what will be a gripping review? The it ends with us. There was beef on set. Artistic differences.
I want to hear about this.
Apparently, yeah. So Justin Baldoni is the director, and he's also one of the stars of It Ends With Us. People know him from Jane the Virgin. He's directed other things. He basically bought the rights to It Ends With Us, like originally before it even blew up on kind of book talk or TikTok or whatever, and during the pandemic, like he saw something in this Colleen Hoover novel, and it's very, I won't say, it's quite rare for kind of the first person to get the options to keep the options and the rights to a film,
very
say.
Rare.
Basically, the running rumour now is that he's fallen out with potentially Colleen Hoover, who's the author of It Ends With Us, the book that the film is based on, Blake Lively, who plays the lead character, and seemingly the rest of the cast. So there were sources telling The Hollywood Reporter there was a fracture among the filmmakers, because Blake is also a producer on the film, basically because there were two different cuts of the movie emerging, right?
Ooh.
So basically, I don't know if it's a thing of too many cooks spoil the pot kind of jazz, because people were sleuthing about this anyway, because if you look at the promotional trail, they all seem to be doing it all separately. Like Justin is on his own, he's not with the rest of the cast. Blake is away doing her own thing with Jenny Slate and the rest of them. They don't follow each other on Instagram anymore. I think Justin still follows all of them, they don't follow him. And now again, people will argue, how could you figure out whether they even followed each other in the first place? He definitely followed Colleen Hoover because they had posted together. Now they don't follow each other what's going on, girls.
Okay.
I don't know.
But we don't know what the nature of this dispute was.
It seems to be like a lot of people in the mix. I think there's reports that this is unconfirmed, but that Blake had kind of taken a bigger role in how the film was looking and like scripting. Apparently that she brought in husband Ryan Reynolds, who's also very much on a mad promotional tour at the minute with Deadpool. I think she had come out and said, like, there's a very specific scene that people know if you've read the book and your film that takes place on a rooftop, that apparently he had a big hand in writing that.
That actually makes a lot of sense now that you say it.
So
that
people,
makes a lot of sense.
Because of the joke, the film suddenly has jokes in it in one particular
scene. And it's kind of like taking the mick out of itself in the actual scene, and you're just kind of like, that makes a lot of sense now.
So people are deducing that, you know, Justin Baldoni has been a big advocate for this film, like probably feels very protective over it. Maybe did he get a bit narky because it's like, okay, you're bringing your husband in. This was my creative vision for the whole time. Other people are speculating.
But isn't he the boss? Like, isn't it like up to him? Well, like, he was directing it.
That's the thing. And also, I will say, like, it's not unusual for there to be multiple cuts of a film before the final cut emerges, right? There are other people suggesting that, and like, this isn't a spoiler, but I feel like it's not coming across clearly in the promotion of this film. This film is about domestic violence. It's not a rom-com.
Oh, God. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you're not familiar with the story, I feel like some of the promotion around it is like, this is a rom-com. It's a tale about love. And I'm like, it kind of is, but like, it's also not really. Brian's shaking his head because he's seen it.
Okay.
People are suggesting that maybe he's taking a backseat in the promotion, Justin Baldoni, because he doesn't want his character to be glamorized and like romanticized.
Mm.
I don't think that's true. I think for a film as big as this, and it seems you're doing very well at the US box office initially, and you know, a lot of people are going to want to see it, I don't think you want this in the promotion of your film. I don't think you want there to be very obvious fractures in the stars and fundamentally the director of the film. You know what I mean? And like, I've seen other kind of clips as well where some of the other stars have been dodging questions around him. Who knows?
Oh, okay. That's not a good look.
No,
really. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. But like, ultimately, I think this is just, it's going to help the film because you're going to go to be like, does this translate on screen? Do they hate each other? Who knows?
Yeah. So the opening ceremony of the Olympics, people know about Lady Gaga and all that stuff. It was all a big deal. So is it like Tom Cruise is going to get shot out of the cannon or something?
I don't, from space?
I can't wait to see
Tom
this.
Tom Cruise is doing a stunt section for the closing ceremony of the Olympics. What does that involve? Tom Cruise rock climbing and everyone going, woo!
No, I heard that he's going to do a parachute jump off the Hollywood sign and like parachute the whole way down the Hollywood Hills because the next Olympics...
To Paris?
No.
That would be way more impressive.
Because they cut to where the Olympics are going to be next year or the next 4 years, and it's in LA.
And
he apparently is going to do like a big hang gliding parachute something off the Hollywood sign, which I'm just, I love the cruiser. The fact that he is so willing to kill himself for everybody, for everyone's amusement. The fact
should he not have just raced against people.
Why
he takes on all the gold medal winner with his chop chop hands.
I'd love to see that too. Love to see that too. Like, I'm just, whatever he's for, whatever crazy ass stuff he is for, I'm like, obviously you draw the line at Scientology and all that jazz, but like any of his crazy stunts, any of his crazy running, 100% I'm all for it.
Otherwise, we're going to have performances from Billie Eilish, Snoop Dogg, who's been doing a lot of the commentary over there. He's kind of emerged as this new star.
He's been brilliant.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What does he do over there? Apart from wear different outfits and sit.
His equestrian outfit was the best. Did you see it?
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
I know, Flavor
he's got like a mascot. You know?
Yeah. Did you see the whole thing about Flavor Flav?
Yeah, he's actually paying for people and stuff.
He's actually
paid for good work.
He paid for, I think it was like the synchronized swimming team or something.
Yeah. Okay, well, cool.
With their rent. Yeah, because they were saying they could go to Paris, but they couldn't afford rent, so he's paying the rent.
Brilliant.
Snoop Dogg ain't doing that.
No.
Snoop Dogg's breaking into their house looking for weed. That's what he's doing.
Empty your pockets.
Him and Martha Stewart are hanging out.
Right, cool. All right, so Snoop Dogg will be, so there'll be all the usual, apart from we don't exactly know what Tom Cruise is going to do.
No, we don't. And I will say they also, because of everything that's been going on in Vienna with the Taylor Swift and the Eras tour, security is mega heightened. There's a lot of tension around the place. So they're also not revealing like the exact location of where everything is taking place until closer to the time because it's just nuts.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So we don't even know if Tom Cruise is going to be in Paris or he's going to be in LA.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I heard it was LA. I heard apparently that he had done like tests already and all the rest of it, that he had like kind of mapped it all out and everything.
That's
all.
Imagine going for a hike and just Tom Cruise is jumping off one of the hills, like, you know.
Yeah. Terrific. I love it. I love it.
How much would you get for doing that, I wonder?
I'd say he'd pay to do it.
Tom Cruise strikes me as a fella who's like, just let me come, Mr. Olympics, please.
Yeah. He'd just be like, give me a reason to do something crazy and jump off something with a parachute strapped to my back. That's the kind of guy that Tom Cruise is.
That's the Olympic spirit, really.
Yeah, exactly. That is the spirit of the Olympics.
In its purest form. Right, so what wine should we talk about first?
Okay,
these are fabulous glasses as well. Tell us a little bit about, because they don't have a stem.
They're the stem.
Wait,
is,
I don't want this.
Don't worry, I'll have yours.
Sorry. Yeah, you have it there.
Do you know what?
I don't drink.
I didn't know.
How am I doing?
You've only
this
sat
lady
beside him a million times.
I did know. I just forgot. Sorry,
you got excited. Double. Yeah,
I did. Right. So
no, he did drink once. I remember, and it
went badly.
He went, yeah, he did. Now, Jesus, the defamation actions after that.
I remember.
Yeah.
Riedel, this Austrian, very famous, huge Austrian glass company, who I respect, and they do all these cool tastings. They love varietal tastes. So these are actually designed for. Not this wine, but the next wine. But they're Pinot Noir and Nebbiolo glasses. So, yeah, so they're not technically designed for Sangiovese, which is what this is.
Yeah.
But they are called wine wings, and they're a new style that they've created, basically. And if you have dinner, if you have lunch in Chapter One, as I did relatively recently, it was one of these glasses. I actually think they're kind of ugly, but they work. The wine is really nice from them. The wine is really tasty from them.
I like it.
I think they're cool.
I think they're kind of interesting. Yeah.
Well, no, but you know,
wobbly kind of looking. You know.
I thought the idea was you were supposed to hold the wine glass by the stem so your hand wouldn't warm it up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but look, we've all kind of chilled out about that. And certainly wine people are quite relaxed and, you know.
Are they, Leslie?
The actual wine people who know about wine, in my opinion, not relaxed. I mean, yeah, look, I would use, if I'm using a stem glass, I would always use the holder by the stem. But they're just, the stemless has become a thing and they're a bit more casual. I break them less often, which is why I bought them.
Good point.
So Mitchells are the importer, basically.
Can you put these?
Yeah, absolutely you can.
You can,
absolutely
dishwasher.
Now, the only thing about dishwashers is put it on a short cycle because it's not the washing that damages them, it's the long steaming. And the long steaming will eventually cloud some glasses. But no, they're absolutely designed for the... And that's, look, I just don't break these as often as I do the stemmed ones. I have nice stemmed ones as well, but for something like this, it's perfect. Anyway, but let's go to what the wine is. Right, so we are San Giorgio Chiampoletto. Rosso di Montalcino. Okay, so everyone's heard of Chianti, most famous Tuscan wine region. Grape there is Sangiovese and some other grapes mixed in usually. But pure Sangiovese and the finest expression of Sangiovese in Tuscany, and is always richer and fuller and more depth and weight, and you can recognise it immediately, even blind tasting one from the other, is Brunello di Montalcino. And Brunello is a town, and then basically there's complicated aging requirements where it has to be aged for a bit. This is the Rosso di Montalcino, which is introduced a few years after the, you know, more recently. And the idea here is it's not aged as long. It's the same grapes. It's from lower down the hill. It's aged a little bit. This is 2022. I got this from Whelan's Wines out in Loughlin Town. It's this fab shop out there. It was a bakery, actually. I bought bread out there today. And a restaurant upstairs. Anyway, David's great. David has been around the trade for years. And I was out visiting anyway, so he said, look, come on, taste this, you love this. So that's where the idea for this, it's a second tier wine, but it's 29, so like it's somewhat affordable. Okay, not every
week.
But
it's
the actual Brunello di Montalcino is a lot more expensive, usually 60, 70, 55 minimum really for any kind of decent one. And Chianti's a lot lighter and thinner, Brunello and Rosso di Montalcino Rosso di Montepulciano, which is another village, not related to Montepulciano d'Abruzzo. They're both similar. It's Sangiovese Grosso, which is the supposedly a better clone of, and its local name is Brunello. That's why. That's the local name of the club.
But
lovely creamy ripe fruit. Sorry, just black cherry. Go on,
The difference between the second tier and the first tier is this bit like, you know, what side of the river you're on and that kind of stuff.
Well, it's younger vines. It's not as it's not the best vineyards basically. But it might be barrel selection somewhat. But if you're consciously making Rosso di Montalcino, you are. not using your absolute best. It's kind of like the second wine of the estate.
Okay.
So the same way in Bordeaux, they'll have a top wine and then they'll might degrade, or you know, the younger vines that are not on, that are under 15 years, which are still producing really good grapes, but just maybe not as high quality as the 25-year-old wines. So there's a few different characteristics of it, but basically it's a younger, easier drinking, earlier drinking version of Brunello di Montalcino, and it's always tasty. Basically.
Yeah, that's absolutely good. Lovely. In fact, I think probably the top tier would be wasted on me. Tell the difference in my what's the if say one happened to be in Croatia, what would be the
Croatia's, they don't export a lot of what they make because they make so much money from it. So they the most famous grape that they grow is a grape called Tribadrag. Right now, that's what we now know is Zinfandel.
So
if you look up a wine encyclopedia and you look up Zinfandel or Primitivo, it'll both say, no, see Tribadrag, because that's the origin grape.
Ah.
Now, there's another grape called Plavig Mali, which is interesting. You'll get some kind of textured, fragrant whites and so on. But in general, Croatian wines are good. They can be a little pricey for what they are sometimes. So don't kind of necessarily...
Unless you're in Croatia.
Yeah, well, you know, in Croatia, they're expensive as well.
Really?
Yeah. Because they know the value. And a lot of rich Germans and Dutch and stuff go down there on their holidays and don't care how much they're paying, you know. So it's kind of hard. And there's a couple in Ireland, and what I've tasted has been good. Stick with local grapes. I wouldn't be trying to get Syrah and stuff. As I say, Tribadrag, Plavig Mali, I'm trying to think of other ones. You'll get in whites, you'll get Malvasias, and you'll probably get some Riesling and stuff like that. And you're on the border with Italy, so there will be an Italian, northern Italian style to some of the wines, which means sort of bright red fruits and so on, and drink them a little cooler as well, I would think.
Of course.
And there's a bit of a natural wine movement. Don't be afraid of the natural wines from there. It's quite good over there. What I've tasted one or two over here that people brought in, and they they're designed to be chilled, so they're and they're lower usually in alcohol and so on, and for sitting by the pool or
Someone says, hold the white wine by the stem to not heat it up with your hand, and red wine by the bulb of the glass.
No, because you see, that's...
Come on, Les.
Sorry, listener, but you're wrong.
Because hand heat is what, 36 degrees? What's the average temperature? You want to drink your wine at 15 to 16 degrees. Right?
Right, yes.
Room temperature is room temperature in a castle in the Middle Ages. It's not room temperature in a modern house. You do not want the wine warm. It'll taste soupy. All you'll get is the alcohol. So I'm sorry.
They want to pour the wine into their hand and drink it from that, really.
So
Richard says, maybe Tom Cruise will play a really mad game of Babington against Snoop Dogg as a really exciting closing ceremony. Brian wants to know, will Lionel Richie be performing at the closing ceremony of the Olympics?
I hadn't heard that.
I hadn't
heard that. But like, was he at the 1984 Olympics or something, maybe? I don't know.
Lionel Richie, Sarah says, like the Super Bowl, artists don't get paid for performing at the Olympics.
There you go.
That makes sense.
You do it for your country.
Yeah, I understand that.
Production costs are covered. Sarah worked on London 2012. So presumably Tommy Boyle.
Oh my God, she's all the Spice Girls team.
Yeah, so that was actually, Sarah, you know what? That was the good one.
Yeah.
That was probably the one everyone remembers.
Yeah. Danny Boyle doing the whole thing for the NHS nurses.
But that implies that Tom Cruise will be in LA doing hit for his country. Saying America, vote Trump.
But like Spielberg did, like people forget this. Like Spielberg helped out with the Beijing Olympics, apparently. He was like brought over to help. There you go.
Jeez, you wouldn't do that now. You'd be in prison for that now. That's tantamount to espionage. What movie would you like to talk about first, Brian?
Oh, Christ. It ends with us, I guess.
Okay, it ends with us.
So, may I just ask, what is this place going to be?
A flower shop.
I'm so sorry. I have an issue with my face says it all. I just hate flowers.
You hate flowers?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Like, why don't you just give me something that's living rather than something that's on its way to dying, and then it's going to create more work for me, and I'm going to have to deal with that. But again, it's a solo perspective. I find flower shops depressing. It's just me. I do wish you luck. I'm so sorry.
I agree. I find them depressing because I feel like... I don't know, it's like the beauty of what a flower is. This is ridiculous. The beauty of what a flower is has been lost, right? It's like we order them like takeout now. It's
yes,
right? You know, so it's what you're talking about. It's highlighting the pain and the tension and the, fact that it's fleeting, it's storytelling. And
sign me up. Wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
Right, we should declare immediate war on the United States. That was mother of God. Even if that's the best clip they have. Yeah, it ends with us.
The West has fallen. Yeah, yes. We're living in end times. Yeah, so this was adapted from the book by Colleen Hoover. The book was a publishing phenomenon, even though it was self-published initially. Sold something like a million copies. Has been translated into like 27 languages. There's even a sequel now called It Starts With Us. That's how imaginative we're dealing with here. You know, Blake Lively plays the character Lily Blossom Bloom, who is a florist.
Guillotine.
Right there.
Guillotine for one.
Like, I mean, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, shall I continue? She is, you know, starting this floral business. She bumps into this ripped neurosurgeon called Ryle Kincaid. Yeah.
That's Justin Baldoni's character.
That's Justin Baldoni's character. Yeah. This man has never seen a carb in years.
Yeah.
He has abs for days. Sure, cool, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Because a lot of neurosurgeons have time
They do, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they've all time for cardio exercises and all that kind of jazz. So, she falls madly in love with him. She has quite a dark past. Her mother and father had a very contentious relationship. There was domestic abuse and sexual abuse between the two of them. Also, while she was a teenager, she had a relationship, this very kind of emotionally fraught relationship with a homeless boy that lived next door to her called, and again, I am not kidding, the guy's name is Atlas.
Okay.
Atlas Carr.
Sorry, he was a homeless boy who lived next door to her.
Yeah, no, he lived in this abandoned house that was next
door
to their
house. Right, okay, got you, yes. Yeah, okay, right, okay. That was like sheet of cardboard.
No. But like he appears like a little. Oh, it doesn't matter. Whatever.
Yeah. So, anyway, Atlas. Yes.
Yeah. So his name is Atlas and the two of them have.
Was he ripped as well?
Yeah, actually he was. Yeah,
of course. Yes.
And then when she bumps into him, like, you know, 15 years later, he's got the hair and he's got a beard and he's wearing denim and he looks like he just walked off a Bruce Springsteen cover. And, you know, he's got this restaurant now that her and the ripped neurosurgeon visit one day. And she's all like, oh, my past has come back to haunt me. And all while this is happening, her relationship with the ripped neurosurgeon is getting more, I would say, emotionally involved, and not all of it good, because what begins is a sort of kind of like an accident where she gets bumped in the head by him when he burns his hand. It then slowly develops into a much kind of more darker physical presence that he has in her life. And the problem, I mean, look, there's no problem, you know, starting with a romance and then it ending up into a domestic abuse and sexual abuse story, because, you know, that generally tends to be what happens in these kind of things. Like, you look at, say, What's Love Got to Do With It, the Tina Turner story. And, you know, when she first met Ike Turner and everything like that, their relationship was so passionate and so volatile. But then, of course, it turns into the horrors of what it was, you know. So there is a kind of a basis for it. The problem with It Ends With Us is the fact that the characters are so thinly plotted and so thinly designed. Like I said, her name is Lily Bloom and she's a florist, and the neurosurgeon is called Ryle Kincaid, and the only like bit of personality he seems to have is that he's got a six pack.
It's like the Simpsons, right?
It's just like I'm going to see to it you won't get apricot wine. You know, like, it's just ridiculous. Like, and it's so soap opera-y and so melodramatic and then so tonally all over the place. Like that scene you were talking about, Fionnuala. Like the first scene where they meet, they're literally taking the mick out of each other's names. She's all like, oh, my name's Lily. And he goes, your name's Lily? And she goes, yeah, Lily Bloom. And he goes, what? And he goes, then she goes, I'm a florist. And he goes, what? And it's like, you're taking the mick out of the film. And then that's the only scene where you're going to have any kind of a self-awareness about it. And it goes into pure melodrama, soap opera crap. There's none of that awareness there whatsoever. So it's just, I always feel really alone when I watch these kind of films, because it's like there are millions and millions and millions of people who love this book.
Yes.
With their lives. And I'm like, what is it the hell that you're seeing that I don't see?
Marion Wickler was in contact to explain. I read both books. Really good. So tell that guy to shut the hell up.
From what I've seen online, because I haven't read the book, but I would follow a lot of people who've read the book, and they went to the premiere and they've seen it, and they're like 10 out of 10. They said it's like very good, very faithful adaption. So like, if you like the book, I do think you will like it.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure it's like, I mean, again, didn't read the book, I would presume there's a lot of faithfulness to it because it has such devoted fans. And generally speaking, like, that's enough nowadays. Like, people can make can make, you know, content, and I hate using that word.
But does Atlas shrug, or does he have a burden?
Oh, he has a burden. And he undergirds her life. Right. Like, you know, that kind of way, because his name is Atlas. Yeah, like, you know, yeah.
Muck. Is this in cinemas?
Yeah, and it should be on streaming. Yeah, I wouldn't pay for this. Yeah. No, seriously, if this was on Netflix, you'd skip over. You'd, like, do the little 2-second preview, like, nah. Yeah. And, like, another point as well is that Blake Lively has what I like to describe as the Jeff Goldblum problem, and I'll explain. What the Jeff Goldblum problem is essentially that every time I see her on screen, I just see Blake Lively.
Yes.
I don't see her playing a florist or playing an astronaut or playing anything. I just see Blake Lively in a floral shop. I see Blake Lively in space.
Same with the husband, though, as well, isn't it?
You know? Yeah, but, like, you see, he can get away with it. He can get away with it in the sense of he's very funny, or at least he's trying to be very funny. And even the effort of him trying so hard to make people laugh is enough to kind of sustain. Kind of like the way that Jim Carrey do. You can do that. You can have that sort of that lack of kind of...
Even Jeff Goldblum can get away with being Jeff Goldblum-y in particular roles.
In particular roles.
Charisma. Yeah. Does he have charisma?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, like, you know, like, Jeff Goldblum, like, he can do the whole kind of fumfer thing that he does. Like, it works in The Fly. Mm. It works in, I don't know, The Royal Tenenbaums, or not The Royal Tenenbaums, you know, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou or something like that. Or, you know, Grand Budapest Hotel or anything like that. When he's playing a kind of a quirky character, it works for him. Blake Lively, when she's trying to portray a serious role like this, it doesn't work. You're just watching Blake Lively, you know, going through terrible things. Going through terrible things.
The thing is, I always think it's interesting. It says something about culture in general, that there's a portion of people who actually like crap. They don't want to actually have to think about it. It's comforting. They want to know what's going to happen. They already know what's going to happen at the end. Yeah. They don't want to think too much about how this is terrible, unrealistic. But they want that kind of comforting arc.
Sean, let me tell you, I watched Love is Blind UK this week and I was wrapped up in it.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
I swear to God, I was wrapped up in it way more than any of these two films. Genuine. And I don't even like reality TV, so that'll tell you. No, I'm all for comfort watches. 100%. If something is stupid but it's keeping you entertained, that's okay with me. Mm. This is terrible, though. I don't know what anyone sees in this shit.
See? And he hasn't even had a drink.
In the shoop.
But Barry wants to know, do critics ever pay to see a film?
Never.
Never. Why would he? All neurosurgeons have ripped abs, according to this texter. Has you ever noticed that brain surgeries always seem to last about 10 hours? The surgeon spends about half an hour fiddling with the patient's brain and the next 9.5 hours crunching their abs, and then they charge you for it. The cheek.
We don't know what they're doing. Like, we're knocked out. Like, they could just be doing...
And it's brain surgery, literally. It's no one can understand it.
No.
So Kieran Culkin is going to be on Broadway now.
He's heading for Broadway.
Is it his first time on Broadway?
No, it's not. He has been in other things before, but he's starring alongside Bob Odenkirk and Bill Burr, and this is their Broadway debut, which is very exciting. Glengarry Glen Ross, scheduled for spring 2025. It's interesting because all of the leads of Succession have kind of gone for theatre post-Succession, which seems to have been the right move because Snook, I know we talked about her being in the picture Dorian Gray. She ended up winning an Olivier Award for that. Jeremy Strong, Love My Life, he won a Tony for Enemy of the People. So there's a lot of hype around this. People are very...
I really want to see this.
I kind of really want to see it too. I'm like, how much are flights and tickets? So
Bill Burr doing David Mamet, like, that's going to be great. Yeah. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
So. I would imagine that it will. Yeah.
Oh, that will sell out.
That will sell out. Yeah. And the tickets will be. And, you know, the only thing you could afford is behind a pillar.
Maybe.
A million miles away from the thing. That's what everyone loved about Anyone But You earlier this year. Two good looking people getting it on. I saw this movie 10 times over when it came out again last year and loved it.
Yeah.
The performances are better. I haven't seen It Ends With Us, but, like, you've two way stronger actors in Anyone.
100%.
Not Anyone But You. Oh, I'm thinking of The Idea of You. Classic. There's too many films with the U in the title.
That's true.
Anyone But You. Well, actually, again, I would still argue you've two stronger actors. Yeah. Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney, they have both proven they can act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And, like, the sexual chemistry between the pair of them could potentially provide clean, renewable energy. for the entire world.
Yeah.
If we could harness it properly, like they were very attractive together. Like, so no, I liked Anyone But You as well. I thought it was really fun, really enjoyable, really safe, really just, you know, a nice warm hug of a film. Totally get it. Like, I totally get why that person liked Anyone But You. I liked it too. Like, but the problem with It Ends With Us is that it doesn't know what it wants to do. I don't think Blake Lively can carry a film like this. And the director as well was taking the most strangest choices and the strangest kind of takes in each scene. And then, like, the production design of it as well, it was like just Etsy vomited all over the screen. Just ridiculous. Just not terrible. It was just
so
bad.
If there's a follow-up, does that mean there's going to be a follow-up film?
Don't know if he has, Justin Baldoni has the rights to it again. I think he's been a bit like blasé as to whether he would do it again, but this is going to make money, inevitable.
There you go.
Whether it's the same people involved or whatever, who knows, but
yeah, absolutely. So we can look forward to reviewing that one next year. Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show News Talk. We do have to take a break, back in a couple of minutes. Did Ryan and Blake try to pull off a Barbenheimer 2.0 this year?
They did, yeah. They 100% tried to do it.
Yeah, really? because he was trotting out Hugh Jackman at the It Ends With Us premiere.
And he did this. There was another thing as well, right? Ryan Reynolds did this like viral interview, which I swear to God, I just want to claw my eyes out when I see these things. But he did this interview where Ryan Reynolds turned up in the middle of the press junket to interview your man, Brandon Sklenar, the guy that played Atlas. And he does this like really funny, inverted commas, funny interview where he talks about being on meth and like what's it like to, you know, kiss my wife and all this kind of stuff. Dude, the film is about domestic abuse. Why are you making funny videos about it?
It's been very weird. Even
so
like
strange.
all the promo around her has been like she's kind of nearly used this as an opportunity. She's just launched a hair care brand. Mm-hmm. You know, any of the promotion I'm seeing of her is her talking about the fact that she's wearing a dress that Britney Spears wore previously. It's not. And look, I'm not saying you have to be very heavy-handed in talking about it or whatever. And I understand there are some people who are going in who haven't read the book and don't know the story. But it kind of seems amiss to also not talk about it because it's the entire theme of the film.
And not only that as well, but like I think the author as well, Colleen Hoover, I remember reading about this, that apparently she came up with an adult colouring book based on the book.
I saw this, and there was a lot of backlash for that, yeah.
Just like, have you not learned your lesson? Have you not learned your lesson?
Like? Oh, go read the room. Anyway, some good news. Hey, guys, no need to fly to America to see Glengarry Glen Ross. Cats Theatre Group in Kilkenny are staging it in the Watergate Theatre at the end of August. Whoa, let the world know. Indeed, we get those lads to fly over to Kilkenny to do it from there. Now, the second movie we're going to be talking about will feature Kate Blanchett.
Mm.
Who she may return in a kind of a Lord of the Ringsy thing?
She said she will because there is a new film confirmed. I think it's set for release in 2026. And I think it's focusing on Gollum and she said she would come back for it. But basically she's doing all this press for Borderlands that Brian is going to review. And she's basically saying she was on Watch What Happens Live and Andy Cohen asked her, there was a question about like her biggest paycheck and he said, oh, it was probably Lord of the Rings. And she said, no, we were essentially paid in sandwiches, whatever. So people have taken that to be like she was paid in sandwiches, literally, which isn't true.
Yeah.
But basically said that she didn't make actually a lot of money and that she doesn't make any residuals from it because at the time Lord of the Rings, it was way before any of that even existed, which is kind of mad again when you think of the success of Lord of the Rings critically and commercially, that they wouldn't have anything even for the later films, like whatever, but maybe Fellowship of the Ring, like you would have thought for Return of the King there might have been something baked in, but there wasn't apparently. But she said she would return as her character for this new film that's coming out in 2026, but none of that confirmed yet. I'd say she's gonna be like,
that's the Andy Serkis one, that's Gollum,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we don't even know what the story of that is and whether it involves elves at all. Oh, do you?
Sorry, I'm a giant Tolkien nerd. Step back.
Yes, okay.
So there was the Silmarillion and then there was also like the attendances of Lord of the Rings, and they do kind of go into how Sméagol became Gollum and all the rest of it when he was with the River People. Yeah, there's a whole thing. And Galadriel, which is the character she played, of the Valar, she there's a whole thing, yes. Like, she did play a big role in it because she was trying to get the ring back to her and all the rest of it. And there was the whole thing of, like, she was tempted by the pair. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay, yeah.
I'm so sorry. I just blanked out for a minute there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, yeah, that would make sense. And there is a, like, there's rich kind of, there's the legendarium, it's called. And there's a whole story about how Sméagol became God.
I'd say she's waiting for, it's not that she's waiting for the call. I'd say she's waiting for the call that's like, I want
a gazillion dollars.
Give me a gazillion dollars because I was paid in ham and cheese sandwiches for the first three.
And she should get it because she was fantastic in that film.
She does good elf. She really does.
She got good at it.
Let's talk about our second wine today. Leslie.
Okay, so like the Whelan's Rosso di Montalcino, which is from lesser soil in Brunello di Montalcino, but the same climate, same grape. This is Lange Nebbiolo. So Nebbiolo is the great grape of Barolo and of Barbaresco. I am the two best wines of Piedmont. And this is from Ascari, which is the brand that O'Brien is look after, who have a cool hotel over there, winery, if everyone's in Bra. And so this is Lange. So this is kind of like from Donnamead, as opposed to the north side, yay! To say from Clontarf. The last time I did this, now I got
Clontarf is also on the north side.
I know, but so in the sense of Clontarf is being, you know, the houses in Clontarf tend to cost more than sort of the north side. Do you know what I mean?
I
got myself into trouble the last time I did this.
Wow,
okay.
Death by metaphor.
Every 6 months, Clontarf comes about the north side, and you do this, and it's incredible.
It's worse when I try the south side. I get totally slagged over. Yeah, so basically this is broader, right? So the vineyards of Barolo are around the village, and there's a demarcated line. When you go past that line, you're no longer in Barolo.
Yeah.
And if you, and those wines, vineyards are small and they cost a lot of money to make these. So this is on lower lying land and basically is easier to grow the grapes and give a little bit more leeway. So perfume, all about perfume. Mm-hmm. This wine can smell of kind of cherries and red fruits, but sometimes kind of smoke and kind of stuff. It's a little drier and lighter, but
it's
a little different to the other one. You know, the other one was a little more approachable. This is a bit more, well, I don't say serious. They're both serious.
Sometimes a Barolo can take you out the back and slap you around a bit.
Yes.
That doesn't really, well, it does a little bit, but that's in a nice way.
Yeah. Because some Barolos are quite tense and quite firm, but this is actually, I think, quite a drink. It's meant to be drinkable early and so on. And so Nebbiolo di Lange or Nebbiolo d'Alba or the sort of other little sub-regions of Piedmont are worth looking at rather than Barolo Barbaresco, which tend to be 60, 70 euros for anything decent. Whereas this is $23.95.
Okay.
The Brines.
Yeah. So Brines. And probably you can get it in many places in Donnamead as well, we need to point out.
Yes.
We'll move swiftly on to our second movie of the day. This is Cate Blanchett not being an elf. It's Borderlands. Here's a clip.
Legend has it that there's this massive treasure hidden in some secret vault. And if you go hunting for it, you'd better take any help you can get. Because it's on the weirdest, most dangerous dumpster fire of a world in the universe.
God, I hate this planet.
What is that smell?
Piss wash color.
Ew!
Put the window up.
I don't want to.
Roll the window up.
It's pee. It's pee. Why do you think it's called piss wash? How did it get the name?
It's in my mouth.
Okay. Guardians of the Galaxy knockoff.
Very, very, very much a Guardians of the Galaxy knockoff. Now, this was based on a video game called Borderlands, and there was a sequel, and then there was the pre-sequel, and yeah. Now, the interesting thing about this is, or I say interesting, there was no real grow for an adaptation of this. You know, there are certain games that just are crying out for it, like, you know, The Last of Us, like Fallout, that are very, you know, heavy on narrative, and they're very much about world building and creating this thing and bringing you into it, like Red Dead Redemption as well. It's practically a film. Borderlands, though, it was what they call a loot and shoot game, which is essentially bang, 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 shoot the person, take their gun. It's really, really cool. And then you keep going. And it's just very procedural in that kind of way. And not only that as well, but the way you play this game is that you play one character and you can go through the entire game. You can reset it and then play a different character, and it's a completely different game. So it's not even as if there's one kind of long form narrative that you can kind of a writer or a director could hang their hat on, you know. But there are characters, and obviously Cate Blanchett plays Lilith, Kevin Hart, who you heard there, plays this super soldier called Roland, Gina Gershon is in there as well, then there's Edgar Ramirez is in there, Jack Black plays this robot called Claptrap. it's very much trying to be. Yeah, no, and like he just never shuts up as well, which again is kind of funny.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So it's when you're watching it, like it is just, it's that kind of a film that's just constantly hammering you in the face with how funny it's trying to be.
Mm.
And it can be very, very tiresome very, very quickly. And this is a film that's like 90 minutes long. So it's really, you know, bang, bang, bang.
Okay, so
along.
Are we talking Deadpool tiresome or even more tiresome than
more
that?
Tiresome, like more tiresome.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
I mean, Deadpool was kind of... You know,
did Donald Clark take the week off work this week?
I mean, if he didn't, that man was
experience
having
last week.
I would say he had an aneurysm watching this. Like, you know, that kind of way.
Oh, we don't wish he had.
I hope he didn't. Oh God, geez, no. I hope Tara Brady took it because, like, you know.
Well, I just happened to Google it, and it says straight up. Uncomplicated pulp, but I can't see who wrote it. Well,
no, I disagree with that. It is completely complicated pulp because it starts off with this big tiresome exposition and Cate Blanchett describing the aliens and describing the planet. And, you know, when you see her acting, you can tell that woman has just completely dissociated from what she's doing. She is just like nodding along and saying her lines and they're like, right, we got it. Let's move on. And Eli Roth as well. I mean, he's primarily known for making these kind of cheap and grungy and grimy and nasty horror films. Like he did the Hostel series. Most recently, he did Thanksgiving, which was... remember when Grindhouse came out with Quentin Tarantino and they had those like kind of small little trailers in the middle of it that kind of became films? This was one of them. And it was great. And Thanksgiving was great. Really fun, really stupid, really gory. Great, great crack. But whenever he kind of steps outside of the horror genre, he's just completely at sea. He did a remake of Death Wish, the Michael Winner film with Charles Bronson from the 70s with Bruce Willis. It was terrible. He did this big CGI kind of Richard Donner adventure comedy called The House with the Clock in the Walls. It was terrible. Nobody saw it. And now he's doing this. And I kind of get the sense as well that the reason he was drafted in was because apparently this went through something like five or six different screenwriters and about 10 or 12 different directors. And eventually just got the point was like, right, we need someone cheap, someone who can just get this done and crank this out because we are losing the option on this. We just need to get this out there. And that's exactly what this is.
And how did they get out? Because this is not a bad cast we're talking about. How did they even get them to sign up to this?
Money!
Okay.
Money, that's it. Like, I mean, Fanula said it earlier. Like, I mean, Cate Blanchett, like, I mean, the work that she's known for, like Tar, the really kind of in-depth work, they don't pay a lot. They really don't. Like, they do them for the work and they do them for the prestige. But, like, it's Thor Ragnarok that got her, like, 12.5 million, allegedly. So, like, that's why she does these kind of films. Like, she probably got, like, serious bang for this. Same with Jamie Lee Curtis as well. Like, she probably got serious money for this. That's the only reason they do these films.
And is this in the movie, in cinemas as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, God help us. David says Cate Blanchett is in the Lord of the Rings trilogy for 17 minutes and she earned 175,000. So she needs some perspective.
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
so,
like,
well,
and also, I will say, in that interview...
And a free trip to New Zealand as well,
well, she lives there. Or, well, she lives there.
Well, yeah. And it's a different country, you know?
No, no, I didn't say that, but I mean...
Scottish.
No, but I'm saying, like, it's like a four-hour flight, like, or something, like...
Yeah,
that's
near.
Yeah. No, come on.
I think when she said that again, she's saying comparatively for that time, because, again, as you said, you're comparing 175,000 to 12 million, allegedly, that she maybe got for Thor Ragnarok. Like, I can understand why she'd be like, yeah, I was only paid sandwiches.
That's true.
Rich people be rich.
Still a lot of sandwiches.
Still a lot of sandwiches.
You'd still build up the cholesterol if you had all that. Fionnuala and Leslie and Brian, thank you all very much.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.